are you sitting down? You know what I'm going to say. And it goes like this. Grab hold of your Bibles and turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. It is the parsha called Nitzavim, because the first unique words are, you are standing. So, you are standing Hayom, this day, all of you, before Yahuwah your El. And of course, oh, did I tell you where it is? Nope, I didn't, I don't think. That would be Deuteronomy chapter 29, just after the curses, and it begins in verse 9. So we ended on verse 8, where he says, one more time, observe therefore the words of this covenant, do them. And variations of that appear over and over and over again. And isn't it amazing? The reason is obvious. You look at the world today, and it's very clear that's not happening. Anyway, you are standing this day. This one begins. Remember, this is Moshe speaking to the mixed multitude, not just so-called Jews, not just the people who do not know their heritage, i.e. the 10 lost tribes, which have been scattered, as have the other tribes as well, Judah and Benjamin and Levi. So it's interesting, and this is the thing I always point out right up front, is when it says Hayom, that word repeats here over and over and over again, and it didn't say you are standing that day, or it didn't use the past tense. It's kind of like what I refer to, and this is a Rashiism, pure and simple. Rashi has made the point in his writings, so we can look at it and go, yeah, that makes perfect sense. The eternal now. So we read this, and it's this day, whatever day we're reading it. And basically the point he's making is this was true for those that were standing there then, that were physically alive at that point, knowing full well that there would be others, many, many others, generations through the millennia that would read this, and it's still true. So you're standing this day, all of you, before Yahuwah your El, your heads, your tribes, your elders, your officers, even all of the men of Israel, your little ones, your wives, the stranger that's in the midst of your camp, from the hewer of your wood to the drawer of your water, that you should enter in to the Brit, the covenant of Yahuwah your El, and into his oath, which Yahuwah your El makes with you, Hayom, this day. And we can make it again, and he does. Remember, his covenants are always eternal. When men break them, that's important, and it's a failure. Doesn't mean he breaks them. He continues to keep them. Why? That he may establish you this day, there it is again, Hayom, unto himself for a people, that he may be unto you an Elohim, as he spoke unto you, as he spoke also and swore unto your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. Not only with you do I make this covenant and this oath, but with him that stands here with us day, this day, Hayom, before Yahuwah, and also, here we go, this is us, also with him that is not here with us, Hayom, on this day, that day. For we know how we dwelt on the land of Egypt. Now, he's going to remind us one more time about Egypt and coming out of Mitzrayim. How we came through the midst of the nations through which you passed. How you've seen their detestable things, their idols, wooden stones, silver and gold, which were with them. Lest there should be among you a man or a woman or a family or a tribe whose heart turns away, Hayom, this day, from Yahuwah Yireel, to go and serve the gods of those nations, i.e. Ishtar, Easter, Ashtaroth, Astarte, or Baal, or Molech, or any of a number of the host of evil. Lots and lots of names, Greek names, Roman names, Norse names, you name it. Don't do it. Lest there should be among you a root that bears gall and wormwood. And it comes to pass, when he hears the words of this curse, that he blesses himself in his heart and says, I shall have peace, even though I walk in the stubbornness of my heart, that the watered be swept away with the dry. And if you've ever heard exactly this kind of thing, folks, from either the Hor Church or the Hor Synagogue, oh, yeah, no, we don't worship those things, even though we have names of months and names of days named after them, and we have our little shrines, and we have so many things that are derived directly from those pagan gods and goddesses and principles and worship practices, and he calls them abomination. But this should ring true. Then he says, Yahuwah would not be willing to pardon him, but then the anger of Yahuwah and his jealousy shall be kindled against that man, and all the curse that's written in this book shall lie upon him, and Yahuwah shall blot out his name from under heaven. Hashemayim. Plural, actually. And Yahuwah shall separate him unto evil out of all the tribes of Israel, according to all the curses of the Brit, the covenant that's written in this book of HaTorah. and the generations to come, your children that will rise up after you, and the foreigner that will come from a far land shall say, when they see the plagues of that land and the sickness wherewith Yahuwah has made it sick, that the whole land thereof is brimstone and salt and burning, is not sown or bearing, nor is any grass grown therein, like the overthrow of Sodom and Gomorrah, Admon Zeboim, which Yahuwah overthrew in his anger and in his wrath. Even all the nations. Now, this is an interesting phrase, right? All is kol in Hebrew. So this is kol ha-goyim. And here it's rendered, I think, probably most appropriately. Because goyim, we say, oh, well, what's goy? The goy are non-Jews. Well, that's a perjurative, and it's not necessarily an accurate rendering of the language. It literally meant the others, the nations. And in this case, it's also fair to suggest, as you'll see in the etymology, there's a pagan connotation, because the nations were, and this assumes that we understand that they're pagan. But all these nations, even they will say, why has Yahuwah done all of this unto this land? What means the heat of this great anger? And then the men shall say, well, because they forsook the covenant of Yahuwah, the Elohim of their fathers, which he made with them when he brought them forth out of the land of Mitzrayim. And they went, and they did what he told them not to. They served other Elohims, other gods, and worshipped them. By the way, Elohims is bad. Elohim is already plural, but we have this English thing, right? Anyway, they served other gods, worshipped them, gods that they knew not, yadded not. Now, yadda means to know experientially in this case. They didn't really know them. They just had heard about them. And that he had not, as it turns out, allotted unto them. As a matter of fact, he forbade them. Therefore, the anger of Yahuwah was kindled against this land to bring upon it all the curse that is written in this book. And Yahuwah rooted them out of their land in anger and in wrath and in great indignation, and he cast them into another land, as it is Hayom, this day. And you know what, folks? We read that. It is still true, Hayom. We have been cast out, all of the nations, the 10 lost tribes that were cast out first, and then Kol Israel, the remainder that was primarily, again, the southern kingdom, Judah and Benjamin and some Levites. But all eventually, both northern and southern kingdoms, went into exile, and there they remain until and still Hayom. The secret things, this is how chapter 29 ends, the secret things belong unto Yahuwah, but the things that are revealed belong unto us and to our children forever, that we may do all the words of this Torah. And that's an interesting thing. The secret things belong to Yahuwah, but the things that are revealed belong to us and our children forever. Now, it's interesting. There are still things that are being revealed, and even now. And I often will point to that verse from Yeshua where he says, those things that are hidden, there'll come a time, and I think we're getting close, and that this is already in progress if you look around. Things that are hidden are being revealed. And it shall come to pass when all of these things are come upon you. Now this, by the way, is chapter 30 of Deuteronomy. And I will contend that of all the Torah portions in the book and all of the chapters, this is one of the most vital. And as I was thinking about it and kind of putting my notes together, I struggled with a proper adjective here. The most important, the most fundamental, the most central. How about concise? Because I'll suggest as we go through here, this entire chapter is extremely concise in a bunch of ways. It lays out a whole lot of future prophecy perfectly. It lays out almost perfectly, about as good as you're going to find, the exact reason why so much of the whore church is absolutely full of it. They'll tell you, only Jesus could keep the law. It's a lie. They'll tell you, you can't possibly do it. You shouldn't even try. It's a lie. This Torah portion makes that clear. And then, when we get to about the middle or the latter third of it, we will see that it also gives what I think and will suggest is the most concise two-word summary of the entire book and how we can use our understanding to rightly divide the word that you're going to see. Okay, and you may know where I'm headed already, but those are the words that appear in chapter 30, right about the middle again. Choose life. It's the essence of what it means to walk in obedience. Choose life. And he says so. All right, so here we go. It'll come to pass, he says, when all of these things have come upon you, the blessing and the curse which I have set before you, and you bethink yourself among all the goyim, the nations, whether Yahuwah has driven you. In other words, here we are in exile. Okay, that's now, right? And you shall return unto Yahuwah your El. Now, I like the way this is phrased. Here you are looking out, having been scattered, and it says, when all of these things have come upon you, you shall return unto Yahuwah Yireh. Now, the question is, have all of these things come upon us yet? Now, I've mentioned this before. I am a believer in multiple fulfillments. Not necessarily that there isn't one that's more notable, but certainly we see a lot of things in prophecy and scripture and history are cyclical, right? As Mark Twain famously said, history doesn't repeat exactly, but it rhymes. And that's true of prophecy. So certain of these things have happened before. Certainly we are, as in fact, and this is as prophesied true, we've been scattered. But all of the curses? Well, perhaps, but I can't help but think we're seeing that there are other curses that are building up to a climax, and we're probably going to have to go through all of those things that we've seen, but maybe not in our lifetimes, still to come. So, are we at the place where we shall return? Not necessarily. I hope that we're close, and I certainly believe and would like to explain to folks we need to be ready for that. But he gives us this assurance. We shall return unto Yahuwah Yireh and hearken to his voice according to all that I command you. Hayom. And that's still this day, right? You and your children with all your heart and with all your soul. And then, he says, will Yahuwah Yireh turn your captivity and have compassion upon you. And now here is probably, again, I mentioned this is succinct and concise, probably the first one-verse summary of the greater Exodus that we'll find prophetically in Scripture. So this is Moses speaking. He says, then Yahuwah will return, turn your captivity, turn it around, and regather you from all the peoples whither Yahuwah Yireh has scattered you. Now, that has not happened yet, but it's certainly something to look forward to. And then he gives more detail. If any of you are dispersed unto the uttermost parts of heaven, from there will Yahuwah Yireh gather you, and from there will he fetch you. So no matter where you are, he knows where you are. And Yahuwah Yireh will bring you into the land which your fathers possessed. Now how's that? This is not one of those things that Christianity pays much attention to, and yet it is an unfulfilled, because we're still in exile. You would hope, you'd think that the whore church and the whore synagogue would think, oh, well, maybe it would be nice if we get regathered. But the point is, they deny that there's any reason for them to even be scattered in the first place, so they're not ready. And maybe the point is, it's the remnant that gets regathered. So when we read this, ask ourselves the question, are we among those that are going to be regathered? Do we want to be? Do we understand? So he says here, whoever you are, he'll get you. And Yahuwah Yireh will bring you into the land which your fathers possessed. You'll possess it. And he will do you good and multiply you above your fathers. And Yahuwah Yireh will circumcise your heart and the heart of your seed to love Yahuwah Yireh with all your heart and with all your soul that you might live. And Yahuwah Yireh will put all these curses upon your enemies, on them that hate thee, that persecuted thee or you. And he says, here it is again, you shall return, shuv, and hearken to the voice of Yahuwah, and do all of his commandments, which I command you, hayom. Let me say it again. If we understand that the reason why the whore kingdom of the north, Ahola, the whore kingdom of the south, Aholibah, i.e. Israel and Judah, the whore church, the whore synagogue, why they're still in exile, this is it. Because they're going to deny that it's even necessary. It's the Old Testament. It's all done away with. Huh. What's it say? When this time comes, you shall return and hearken to the voice of Yahuwah to do all of his commandments. All of them? Not just the ones we like, not just the ones that we claim haven't been done away with, which I command you this day. And Yahuwah Yireh will make you overabundant in all the work of your hand and the fruit of your body and the fruit of your cattle. This sounds like those blessings, doesn't it? And the fruit of your land for good. For Yahuwah will again rejoice over you for good as he rejoiced over your fathers. And here it is one more time. Now we're going to head into the place that I have suggested is a real damning indictment of the whore church and the extremely satanic teaching that you can't possibly keep his Torah. Oh, no, it's too hard for you. Only Jesus could possibly do that. And it's an utter bald-faced lie. One of the worst in Torah. Probably, you know, not too far down the list from you can be like God and you will not die. And then the modern understanding, again, the Torah is done away with. His word. He can't keep his word. So why should you? Here you go. if you shall hearken to the voice of Yehuyarel to keep his commandments, his mitzvot, and his statutes, hukim, which are written in this book of the Torah, if you turn unto Yehuyarel with all your heart and with all your soul, he keeps saying that. Here we go. Now, by the way, this is in Romans 10. We'll talk about this tomorrow, probably, but because Paul repeats it, and this too gets taken out of context. But here it is, the simple three-verse summary of how you can go to this concise, written understanding of the essence of Torah and reveal the lie to the entire whore church that it's not too hard, that nope, the claim that only Jesus could possibly do it is a lie. For this commandment, which I command you this day, says the Creator, through Moses, is not, what? It's not too hard for you? Neither is it far off. And here I will do it in the way I think it's intended to be read, which is a little bit sarcastically. Because basically what he's saying is a whole bunch of ways, hey, it's not too hard for you. Hey, here we go. It's not up in heaven that you need to say, well, who shall go up to heaven and bring it to us, to make us hear it, that we may do it? Nor is it beyond the sea that you need to say, who shall go over the sea for us and bring it unto us and make us hear it, that we may do it? It's too hard, it's too hard. Only Jesus could keep the law. Wrong. Lie. Absolute BS. The word, he says, no, it's very near unto you. It's in your mouth, it's in your heart, that you may do it. And here we go. When I said we're getting to the point of the most important, concise two-word summary in the book, and the elements that surround it, this is where it starts. Verse 15. See, I have set before you Hayom, this day, life and good, and death and evil. And that I command you, Hayom, this day, that's today, folks, to love Yehuyarel, to walk in all his ways, and to keep his commandments, his statutes, and his ordinances. Those things that take the form of law. His commandments, his statutes, and his ordinances, right? Mishpatim, mitzvot, and hukim. And then you shall live and multiply, and Yehuyarel shall bless you in the land that you go in to possess it. But if your heart turns away and you will not hear, or if you claim you can't do it because it's too hard, I think is another way to understand this, but then you're drawn away instead and worship other gods and serve them, Easter maybe, or the god that was born on December 25th, and serve them, well, I declare to you, Hayom, that you shall surely perish. You shall not prolong your days upon the land, whether you go over the Jordan to go in and possess it. Now, we know that that happened, but we also know that in the same place where he's warning about something that has happened, he's also assuring us of something else, the regathering, the greater Exodus, that will happen and has absolutely, positively not yet. And here we go. Now, this is probably one of my very favorite verses in the entire book, folks. And it's a warning. It invokes the same two witnesses that Yeshua does when he says he wasn't changing one yoder tittle. Isn't that an interesting, not coincidence, it was deliberate. So here we go. Again, I call heaven and earth, those two witnesses, to witness against you this day, Hayom, that I've set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore, choose life, that you may live, and you and your seed, that you and your children, your seed, may live. So here it is. I've set before you, Hayom, this day, life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore, choose life. Now, I will contend again, that is the most concise two-word summary of the choice that lays before us and how stark it is that we're going to find in Torah. It's also a great understanding of how we need to rightly divide the word. In other words, when we have a question and we don't understand and we say, well, this seems contradictory, choose life that you might live. And I also, in the past, I've joked about it. This is an open book test. Right? Here it is. You can turn to this and read it. Got a choice? Yep, we do. The Creator of the universe has given us the choice. It's going to apply whether we're talking about the mark of the beast or dishonest weights and measures or sex or adultery or marriage or Sabbath or Moedim or you name it. Any of the many things about which he's written and given us very clear instruction. And the whore church will tell you, you can't do it. It's too hard for you. He says, no, it's not. It's not too hard, nor is it too far off. Choose life. What are we supposed to do? What does this amount to? To love Yehuyarel, to hearken to his voice, to cleave unto him, for that is your life and the length of your days, that you might dwell in the land which Yehuyarel swore unto your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to give them. Now, this, as it turns out, is a double Torah portion. And I often think that's a wonderful place to pause, because it is. It's a great summary. Again, it's concise, and it's about as clear as it could possibly be. Once you realize, you know, how much the lie has been built upon it, and how many times we've heard things that Jesus did away with the law, you can't possibly keep it anyway, it's a good thing we don't have to, I'm not under the law. No, we're under the thumb of Big Brother, folks, and the most evil and tyrannical regime perhaps the world has ever known, with levels of technology never seen before, and finally a level of idolatry in the form of AI that not only makes the wooden stone and the silicon gods look tame by comparison, it makes them look downright inanimate. Because what's coming, and what we are understandably, knowingly braced for, it makes the choice, choose life, ever more vital to understand. All right, so the next Torah portion, this is actually, this week, the standard reading is a double portion. And while there's plenty to talk about in what we've already dealt with, the next portion is called Vayelech, and it is simply one chapter. We'll go ahead and go through that. It's also a wonderful chapter. It's just that the combination makes for a whole lot of meat in one week. So it says, Moshe went and he spoke all these words to Kol Israel, all of the combined mixed multitude. Not just the quote-unquote Jews. And that's one of the things that I have a big problem with the Horse Synagogue about. They'll tell you all of this is for Jews, right? The Noahide laws that are made up out of whole cloth. Those are for the Gentiles, the pagans. And that's a lie. It's not too hard for you. If we are to be grafted in, what are we grafted into? Well, the mixed multitude. There were a lot of people that weren't of the 12 tribes that were grafted in then. Still applies to us. It's the essence of what the ministry of Paul was saying to those who understood that the Mashiach was for what? All the families of the earth. Moses says, though I'm 120 years old, Hayom, this day, I can no longer go out and come in, and Yahuwah has said unto me, you're not going to be able to go over this Jordan, the river. So Yehuyarel, he will go over before you, he will destroy the nations from before you, and he will dispossess them, and Yoshua, and the namesake, of course, is obvious, he shall go over before you as Yahuwah has spoken. And again, there is a there's an interesting, I guess you'd say, combination of things that we've already seen laid out that's also being laid out again here. Joshua is being given agency. He is the one that is going to pick up the mantle where Moses leaves off. He will lead the folks in there. And Yahuwah will do unto them as he did to Sihon and to Og, kings of the Amorites, unto their land which he destroyed and whom he destroyed. And Yahuwah will deliver them all up before you. And you'll do unto them according to all of the commandment which I have commanded you. And remember, he has them deal pretty, well, not just pretty, but extremely harshly with the pagans, and particularly those pagans that are not even human, that have corrupted blood, that arguably their DNA isn't even human anymore. That's a bit of a, I won't call it an extrapolation. I think we can see it and we can understand it. It's just that at the time people began to interpret what this was meaning, the concept of DNA didn't even exist. We didn't realize what it meant to be as Moshe was, as Noach was, perfect in your bloodlines, or tamim. Be strong, therefore, and of good courage, right? Kazak. Fear not, don't be frightened of them, for Yehuyarel, he is the one that goes before you. He will not fail you nor forsake you. You notice Yeshua makes that same point. Because he is the same Elohim, the Erechad. Moshe called unto Joshua, and he said unto him, in the sight of all Israel, Kazakh, you be strong and of good courage, for you will go with this people into the land which Yahuwah has sworn unto their fathers to give them, and you shall cause them to inherit it. And Yahuwah, it is he that does go before you. He'll be with you, he will not fail you, nor forsake you. Fear not, nor be dismayed. So Moshe wrote out HaTorah, et HaTorah, this instruction, and he delivered it unto the priests of the sons of Levi that bore the Ark of the Covenant before Yahuwah, and unto all the elders of Israel. And Moshe commanded them, saying, at the end of every 7 years, in the set time of the year of release, right, the Shemitah year, in the Feast of Tabernacles, a.k.a. Sukkot, the one that's coming up as the climax of the fall feast. So we're heading into that season now, and this is why it's important to remember this and why, again, this is fitting to think about. When all Israel has come to appear before Yehoyarel, remember it's a feast of ascension, in the place which he shall choose, then you shall read this Torah, this instruction, before all Israel, Kol Israel, in their hearing. Assemble the people, the men and the women, the little ones, the stranger that's within your gates, that all may hear, and that they may learn and fear Yehoyarel, and observe to do all of the words of this Torah. And that their children who have not known may hear and learn to fear Yehoyarel, as long as you live in the land that you go over the Jordan to possess it. And the problem was they failed. And that, again, is why they're not in the land. We're not in the land. And even though there are some that are trying to return, understand the whore church has not been regathered. The whore synagogue has not been regathered. And the things that were discussed, right, all of the people from the four corners, from the ends of the earth, that hasn't happened. And Yahuwah said unto Moshe, Behold, the days approach that you must die. So call Joshua, present yourselves in the tent of meeting, that I may give him a charge. And Moses and Joshua went, and they presented themselves in the tent of meeting, and Yahuwah appeared in the tent in a pillar of cloud, and the pillar of cloud stood over the door of Ha-Olah. Ohel is tent, over the door of Ha-Ohel. And Yahuwah said to Moshe, Behold, you're about to sleep with your fathers, and this people are going to rise up. They're going to go astray after the foreign gods of this land, whither they go to be among them. And you know what? They will forsake me, and they will make void, briti, my covenant, which I have made with them. Now, this is interesting. Because the word here, we've seen it, and it's appeared a number of places. This is what a husband does with his wife when he casts down her vows. He doesn't just make them void. He makes it as if it never existed, as if it was never even part of the timeline. And that is essentially what the Creator is saying is going to happen. These people, they're going to make void. They're going to make it as if it never existed. My covenant that I've made with them. Now, guess what? They don't have the authority, the power to do that, because he and his covenants are forever. But they're going to try. Then my anger, he says, shall be kindled against them in that day, and I'll forsake them, and I'll hide my face from them. I always ask this question when I read that verse. Is that still true? We're still in exile. Is his face still hidden? Well, we've certainly seen indications when the Torah came to dwell among us and to teach his word. But on the other hand, is that true today? Is his face hidden? There certainly are a lot of indications. You go look at the whole church, people will ask, why is there no power in the church? I think this verse gives us a lot of insight there. Anyway, he says, I'll hide my face from them, and they shall be devoured, and many evils and troubles shall come upon them. So they'll say in that day, notice it's not this day, in that day, are not these evils come upon us because our God is not among us? And I will surely hide my face in that day for all the evil which they have wrought. And that they did what? They turned to other gods. Now, there it is, folks. If we understand this, that is still true. The whore church is still turned to other gods. Oh, they'll say we worship the Lord. How do they know the difference? The path is narrow, says Yeshua. Few there be that find it. It's not the vast majority. It's not those that say, in the name of Jesus, we're going to do all this stuff, and we get our get-out-of-hell-free cards. He says the vast majority, the broad path that they walk, at least to destruction. Few there be that find the real one. Why? Because they have turned to other gods. So he says, write out a song for you to teach it in the B'nai Israel, put it in their mouths, for this song may be a witness for me against the B'nai Israel. Now, this one's interesting, too, because the rabbis will say that this is number 613, the final mitzvah in the book. Write out this song. And there's an interesting midrash that goes with that. I actually think this is kind of an important understanding. I don't think it's extremely clear. But I do think it's valuable to at least consider. The claim is that the sages say what we need to do, the reason this is taught to each new generation, the song that's going to be laid out here for us, is because it is about making the Torah new, renewing the covenant in every generation. And obviously most of us grew up in a place where that wasn't true. And we had to learn it or return to it on our own in too many cases. Now, at least, having done so, many of us are being able to say, well, we can teach our children, and that's good. Anyway, he continues, "For when I have brought you out and brought them into the land which I swore unto their fathers, flowing with milk and honey, and they shall have eaten their fill and waxen fat, they turned to other gods and served them, and then despised me and broken, made void again. They made it as if it did not exist, Briti, my covenant. Then it'll come to pass, when many evils and troubles are come upon them, this song shall testify before them as a witness. It shall not be forgotten out of the mouths of their seed, for I know of their imagination, how they do even now, before I have brought them into the land which I swore." So in other words, they're already stiff-necked. He knew it. So does Yah. So Moshe wrote this song the same day, and he taught it to the B'nai Israel. Now, we're going to see the actual song in the next Torah portion. But as it goes here, it says, "He gave Joshua, son of Nun, a charge, and he said," here it is again, "Kazak! Be strong and of good courage, because you shall bring the B'nai Israel into the land which I swore to them, and I'll be with you. And it came to pass when Moshe had made an end of writing the words of this Torah in a book, Sefer, until they were finished, that Moshe commanded the Levites, the ones that bore the Ark of the Covenant of Yahuwah, and he said, take this Sefer of HaTorah, this book of the law," or I don't like that, as you know, it's this book of instruction, "put it by the side of the Ark of the Covenant of Yahuwah, Urel, that it may be there for a witness against you. For I know your rebellion, your stiff neck. Behold, while I'm yet alive with you, Hayom, this day, still you've already been rebellious against Yahuwah. How much more so after I'm gone, after my death? So assemble to me all the elders of your tribes and your officers, that I might speak these words in their ears." And here it is again. Note, one more time, Yeshua called these same witnesses, heaven and earth, to witness against them. "For I know that after my death you will in any wise deal corruptly. You'll turn aside from the way which I've commanded you." And of course, that's the essence, right, of the teaching that Jesus did away with the law. Turn aside from the commandments. "And evil will befall you," and here we go, "in the end of days." So the question is always asked, right, the end of days. Are we there yet? But this part at least fits, "because you will not do that which is good in the sight of Yahuwah, but instead you will do evil in the sight of Yahuwah to provoke him through the work of your hands." Now, full stop. We're almost at the last verse in the chapter, but I think it's fascinating. "To provoke him through the work of your hands." And we look at that and we say, well, that was them then, right? That was people that made these fake gods out of wood and stone. We don't do that today. Oh, really? There aren't people that are building quantum AI computers, AGIs, and then ASI, artificial superintelligences, that are basically already, they're already worshiping these things as God. Look at what kids do. Okay, you got ChatGPT and all the phones. It's like a little God that you can hold in your hand, and it answers all your questions. Do you think that since that sense replace him, and ask it a question, it'll tell you, we're the gods, not the Bible. Talk about doing evil in the sight of Yahuwah and to provoke him through the work of your hands. I don't think it gets any more clear than that, personally. And it says, last verse, "Moshe spoke in the ears of Kol Ha'edat of Israel," all of the assembly, the Kahal, "the words of this song until they were finished." And with that, the Torah portion ends. So the next one, "Give ear, you heavens," is called Parsha Hazinu, and this is where we actually see the second, as it turns out, of the two songs of Moshe, but the witness against them, and the witness still against us. Hayom.